is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington talking with Callum Bowen, and it is so much fun. I'm really looking forward to talking with you for your music for Piku Niku. So thanks so much for taking some time.
Yeah, thanks for speaking to me.
This is such an unusual game, and it kind of wasn't even on my radar screen until I started reading reviews of it, and my favorite description of what it's like to play came from the Kotaku review. I don't know if you saw it, but the reviewer said it's like, well, imagine you've taken like a mild hallucinogenic and then you're watching a foreign language kids TV show.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
No, I've never done either of those things on radio.
No. I have watched foreign kids TV, and it totally captures that sort of, wait a minute, what's going on here? I'd love to know, just right off the bat, how you got the gig writing the soundtrack for this really, really fun game.
So it kind of came to me in a roundabout way. Usually these kind of things come to me just through a kind of random email that someone's seen my work somewhere and saying, oh, you know, we're working on this game. Are you interested in working on it? But I got suggested to it by a friend who is in the group Karakara Benito, who they were just a bunch of some people that I had we've been friends for a while and make quite similar music. That's kind of just within the London kind of scene. And Gus, the main producer for Karakara Benito, couldn't do the project. I think they were just busy with touring or something like that. So he just suggested me for it. So I kind of, just then got an email after that. And we met up in Brixton with Arno, who's one of the lead developers. And then, I just I think they must have shown me some artwork and told me about the story. And it was just clear, like, this game is going to fit the kind of music that I want to make. So I was just like, yes, okay, let's do this. Sounds good.
Yeah, it really is, because I've listened to some of your early music, and like Lovely Planet, and I can totally see why they would have chosen you to create the music for this really quirky world. And so I'm wondering, you know, beyond the concept art, was there anything else about it that they described to you that really like got you hooked to want to do it?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I think I must have played a demo as well, and like that's where you really get a feel for it, kind of the movement and the characters and things like that. Just kind of, you know, it just definitely struck me as everything about this game is quite silly, and I couldn't see myself getting into arguments about, well, you know, we really need to reflect how this character is feeling, so I think you need to change this piece over and over again. I could just tell that fun was the center of the game from the beginning, and that seemed like something that would mesh well with how I like to work, I think.
What's so cool, listening to the soundtrack, like start to finish, you developed some really wonderful themes. There are a couple that just, they keep coming back and back, and I know you have a reason for that, and we'll get to that in a second. But what's fun about it is the way you've used those themes as almost like a theme for a set of variations. And so it must have been fun to kind of experiment with all those different sounds.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was. There's basically one central theme. And initially, the developers had kind of this story where I'm trying to remember what it was. We had this whole thing where you're in a kind of perfect village where everything is perfect and everyone is all in this kind of like rigid clockwork kind of thing. And then you slowly discover different villages in the game that are less perfect, or people who've been rejected from the perfect town. But that was the old story. They scrapped it and started the whole thing all over again. But from the initial point, from that point of view, my approach to the music was going to be having this kind of very rigid, perfect music that was almost like this kind of totalitarian state where you're only allowed to listen to this one theme over and over again. And then as you leave, you kind of hear more different music, or you get kind of like a break from this kind of like intense kind of almost like kidnapping and having to, you know, when they do, what do they do?
Oh, yeah, musical torture. You know, they force you to listen to.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Well, what's so interesting about it, I mean, it on the surface, it does seem like it's a very happy, sunny world. I mean, you play as this little character that has been asleep for so long that you're known, kind of legends have grown up around your existence, and you're known as the Beast. But it turns out, really, you're just helping the villagers and doing things for them. And yet, there is this kind of subtext or darker current with the mayor, who really wants to keep everybody in line by giving them money. So those kind of competing ideas of this happy world, but it's happy at kind of a pretty high price tag, it sounds like.
But you know, the mayor's been through some stuff himself. There's some backstory to the mayor. He tried to build a perfect town before, but then at some point in the game, and this is spoilers, you see like the remnants of one of his old, I can't remember, it might have been some kind of town that he made, but everyone had died in it. And I think, so now he's kind of, I don't know, he's grieving in a strange way, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows how to process all of that, but you know, he's got some redeeming qualities.
Yeah, for sure. And just the idea that giving people bags full of money will make them happy too. I mean, he's trying.
Indeed.
So
yeah, I think a lot of the approach to this is throwing something so obviously naive at the audience. And it's a similar kind of thing with the music, something like these just obviously fake sounding trumpet sounds or drum sounds or just all these weird sounds, but then they're actually being something underneath it that's a bit more compelling than that you slowly kind of discover. I think it's a quite common theme for the music and the game.
And the mountain village, the music that you wrote for that first village where you appear, is exactly like that, because you've got the theme, but then there's all of these layers going down underneath, and you even managed to throw in a little barking dog, which is adorable.
Yeah, that's a bit of a signature sound for me. Although sometimes I put in my actual dog's bark. I have done that in a few songs. Oh, actually, in the game, you can get a mask where if you press a button, it barks, and that is my dog's bark.
Oh, that's adorable. So are you able to tune the dog's bark so that it fits in with whatever cue, the key of the cue or the scale or whatever?
You can do that, yeah. So I use the EXS24 on Logic a lot, which is, you can just drag in an audio file and you put it in the EXS24 and then you say which note the original audio file is, and then you select a range, and then it basically just maps it to a keyboard. And I use that a lot to just get quite strange sounds and things like that.
That's really fascinating. I haven't done any composing ever using programs like that. So what is it like when you've got basically millions of colors? I mean, how do you start to kind of narrow them down so that you get a palette that isn't like overwhelming and a palette that you know is going to work from one cue to another in a game?
To be honest, I'm not sure if I'm even that good at that. I think I usually make things that aren't super concise and within a very consistent kind of world. But I do make folders of set sounds that I want to use for a few different places. But I don't know, just sometimes when you're writing, you want to do something else. I'm always just more drawn to, well, this thing is really fun and compelling. I don't really care if it doesn't sound that much like the last area you were in. And I'll kind of try and make it work. But to be honest, I think, I don't know. I suppose I sort of think that if you're the one writing it in general, there's going to be some kind of consistency. And I usually err on the side of, let's just make it fun and not worry too much about, well, maybe it should have this instrument because, that would be more consistent with that area kind of thing.
Well, it sounds like because there are so many different areas in the game, there's a mountain temple and other places you can explore. There are caves and other villages, too. That must have given you a fair amount of freedom to write music in different styles, too.
Yeah, definitely. And like the devs kind of approached the whole thing saying, like, anything you want to do, just tell us and we'll just put it in the game. We'll try and make it work. And I think just like our approach to the whole thing was trying not to have boundaries necessarily on, well, what would be appropriate for this, within the game, within the game design as well, just at a certain point, it turns into almost like a drawing game where you get to draw something. And then, there's also like there's kind of like basketball game within the game. There's also a dance mode within the game. There's kind of all of these kind of switch ups in the style, I guess, like gameplay style. And I think the music is a similar thing where we weren't afraid to kind of completely throw something unexpected at you.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Which is great because, it's total fantasy. It's a world that doesn't exist anywhere. So there's no reason why it has to be like based in reality. And it sounds like if you had overthought it, it would be a lot less fun.
Yeah, I think so. I'm glad I didn't overthink things.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the Q Pinecone Power, because what I love about it is it's such a throwback to that classic sound, from the early 90s of the kinds of music that you would hear with like a Space Invaders type game or something like that. Was that one of your influences?
I'm going to take a listen back to that now. Hold on. I reckon one of the main influences for that was like almost like a sonic boss.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I initially wrote that as like a mayor's fanfare on one of the earlier versions of the game. The mayor was I think it was like his first time entering into the village or something. And that was supposed to be the fanfare for him entering, but it was supposed to be kind of this sort of menacing kind of thing. And it also, but then when we needed something for that boss, then yeah, I kind of repurposed that and added some more drums. I think I sped it up a little bit, but yeah, Sonic was definitely an influence for that. The boss tracks tend to take from kind of Final Fantasy as well. That's like a big influence for those. So kind of Final Fantasy VII kind of boss tracks. You know, like at the beginning of Final Fantasy VII, you're running through that reactor or something.
Oh, sure. Like yeah.
I'm trying to remember that kind of energy and that kind of sound was definitely something that I brought into those moments.
Wow. It's just amazing that you can reproduce that sound. And I'd love to know, you know, what kind of software, I guess you mentioned, was it Logic that you're using?
Yeah.
The software? Yeah. So is there like a special library, like a dedicated library for like old synth sounds?
There are definitely like a bunch of like kind of emulator VSTs that you can get if it's like a some kind of old synth. Like I never really use hardware stuff, firstly because I don't really like having to be forced into recording something into it. Like if I have MIDI, I can kind of change things pretty much the whole way through. Mm-hmm. And then also it's just really expensive, I guess, and they might break. So I always just like use pretty much entirely like software instruments. But there's like a keyboard called the Korg M1, which has like a bunch of like very kind of 90s sounding drum kits, which I use pretty much for the whole of this soundtrack. It also has like a kind of like a vocal do do kind of sound, which is like just it's just a very specific kind of era when like things weren't like completely abstract sounding, like more like 8-bit kind of time where it was like, okay, this sort of sounds a bit like strings, but it's just more of just like this is just some kind of sound wave. But where it got somewhere between being unreal and real, there's just kind of like this, to me, there's this kind of perfect 90s kind of era where it's like, okay, this kind of choir sound or this kind of trumpet sound or cowbell sound or something like that, it's just like they're always so punchy and like immediate and in your face and just like very unashamedly not real, but they kind of have a different value to, you know, they're not necessarily trying to sound exactly like that, but I used a lot of those kind of sounds, like, you know, fake trumpet sounds or yeah, so that was kind of my, those kind of keyboards. We'll be right back. I also use Massive and FM8, which are a bunch of software synths from Native Instruments. I use those all the time, to be honest, in just quite a general way. Like, I think they're quite like malleable for a bunch of different sounds. It's just kind of synth that I'm used to using, so I kind of know how to use it for what I want.
Yeah, which is really helpful, because then you're not learning something at the same time you're trying to write the music. So
yeah, that's definitely helpful.
Well, you must have played a lot of games growing up, because the sound that you've got now is like such a wonderful homage to that. So what are some of the games that like really influenced you when you were little, that, you know, you were able to kind of reproduce with the sounds?
I think I definitely had like the classics, kind of Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, and before that, like the Sonics. There are a few older games that I discovered later, like the Earthbound series, which was definitely a huge influence. I played a ton of Animal Crossing and like love all the music in that. What else? Shenmue as well,
game
for the Dreamcast, and Phantasy Star Online. I mean, those two are definitely not in the same kind of like tone ballpark as this game, so I didn't really take direct influence from them, but those are just some of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, I bet. Well, did you ever get in trouble with your parents for playing too much of a thing, or spending too long playing a game?
No, I had no rules. I could do what I want. They were pretty lax. I think it helped.
Yeah, definitely.
Really get into stuff.
Yeah. Well, I loved, you mentioned that you love the music so much for a couple of games. You just like hang out on the island so that you could just listen to it and kind of soak it up and stuff.
So I would definitely do that. Like, two of those was Final Fantasy X, Besaid Island. Like, I would just hang out there. Like, I was done with everything, but I just wanted to run around, just like listen to the music. And you just can like hang out on the beach for a bit. I definitely did that with like Outset Island on Wind Waker.
It's
the first one. But I was just like, oh, this is the best music. I just don't want to leave this area.
Yeah. And I always loved when the ship shop would show up, and that music too in Wind Waker was just amazing. Well, Sam's Pottery, one of the cues in Piku Niku, reminded me of some of that Wii like lobby music, the Wii shop and that kind of thing. And it's just amazing how instantly that sound can like take you back to what you were doing in the Wii shop, or, you know, messing with your Mii or whatever.
What were you doing in the Wii shop?
Looking for other games, I think.
Yeah, I mean, all of the Wii music is so good, like Wii Sports music, and just like the whole hub. Like, I remember there was like a photo channel, weather channel. I don't even think I used them very much, but I remember just going on them every now and then because I really liked the music.
Did you make the jump from loving the music in the games you played when you grew up, and then when you were a little older, to actually writing music for games? What was that whole journey like?
I do remember a specific point where writing music for games was something which I thought, okay, that's something I want to do, but there's a bunch of steps that I just don't know how to, I can't even begin thinking about it, and it just doesn't seem possible. I don't really know. And I was in that mind frame for a little bit. And then I was at university, and so I studied music at Sussex. And one of the reasons that I went there was because I heard someone who went there went on to work in games, doing music for games. And I actually got the email of this guy. I can't remember who it was now. But I just kind of, at a certain point, I thought, well, if I want to do this thing, then I've just got to like find out what the steps are. And just no longer think, well, you know, that's not, I can't do that. So I just kind of thought, okay, I need to email this guy. So I emailed him and said, what should I do? Like, I think he was the one who told me, create some kind of portfolio. Even if you don't have any work, you can create work for yourself. So what I did was I downloaded trailers from YouTube, took the music off, and remade the my own audio to that, just as something to have for a portfolio. And then, I mean, I think I was lucky timing wise, because it must have been about 5-6 years ago when I started looking for work in games. So I would just go online, and it was just like a real boom of just the indie community and people getting excited about independent games. So, I mean, I would just go on a bunch of different forums and just post, you know, the stuff that I'd made with the trailers and be like, I'm looking for work, I want to work on anything. And just, I kind of had a long period of taking pretty much everything that came my way and just trying to do my best on that. And I think maybe it took like 2-3 years of working on kind of small things that no one ever really played, or maybe it never got finished. But, you know, you do your best anyway, and some people notice that, and then just, you know, at a certain point it kind of flips into, okay, this is my career now. Cool. The dream became a reality.
That is amazing. Were you able to take courses at Sussex that were directly about like writing music for interactive media, or was that a skill that you've kind of picked up along the way?
I think that's something I did outside of university. They had some kind of like film music. They had a film music module, but I think that's as close as it got, really. I know there are a bunch of courses that are more attuned to that, and they tend to be more either like an engineering or music tech or computer science kind of related course, I think. Mm-hmm. At university, we mostly just studied like just straight composition, just, you know, write music. And, you know, outside of that, you figure out your own stuff. And I guess I did.
Yeah, clearly. Well, because Sector Dub is such a tiny, tiny team, there's you and three other people, you did double duty as the audio director too. So what was the learning curve for that like?
To be honest, I don't think I've ever worked on something where I also wasn't the audio director, just because there weren't that many other people. I mean, the only game I would have worked on, I think, was Snipper Clips, where I was directly working under someone else, and that was all within the massive corporation of Nintendo. And, you know, as much as it was actually a quite small team that worked on that game, it was all kind of overseen by all of this other stuff. So I don't really have all that much experience of being directed. I don't think I would like it very much. But I'm pretty happy being my own audio director, I suppose. You know, you tend to have kind of a more cooperative kind of relationship with the other people working on the game and kind of bounce ideas off each other. And I always tend to trust the people that make the game, that they know what they want people to feel, and they know the game better than I do. So I definitely do defer to the other devs when it comes to something about tone or something like that. And then from there, I kind of take it off to think about how I want to express that tone or whatever meaning they want to put into these different situations.
Well, it must be kind of nice to have such a small team to work with, because I know when other people, composers, are working for a AAA studio, there are so many people up the chain, up the food chain, who have to sign off on a thing. So it must be really nice to work for kind of a small and nimble team where decisions get made really quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't really know anything else, so you're making me scared now.
Oh,
I don't
no.
want to work on anything with more than like five people.
Well, you can work your way up, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I would think as a composer, one of the hardest things would be to be staring at a blank screen and kind of wondering, how am I going to get started? So what is your composing process like?
Most of my composition takes the form of kind of piano improvisation at the beginning. Like, I'll know what the situation is. I guess there'll be like an interpretive process of, okay, so I'll see the artwork. What are the colors like? What are the shapes like? How much does this connect to reality? How much is this completely fantasy? And like all of those kind of different metrics, you kind of just zone in on some kind of like aesthetic somewhere from your cultural memory. And you just, I don't know, for me at least, when I get that information, whether it's just one screenshot or an explanation of the gameplay or something like that, and then, yeah, you just kind of transform that into some kind of attempt at a sound, and then you just start playing, I suppose, and see what happens. And then from there on, like, I think after like a bit of improvisation, I'll find something is compelling in this. Maybe it's the chord sequence. Maybe there's a melodic thing. And then there are occasions when I do write things out if I'm kind of feel I'm getting stuck. And particularly in the mind frame that I'm looking at the whole soundtrack, sometimes I do write out all of the melodic themes so that if I'm coming up with a new track, I tend to want to find some way to use those themes, because it's kind of like if you're gonna create an entirely new melody, there's got to be kind of a reason for it. And sometimes the reason is just people have heard this other theme so many times, it will just be a more refreshing experience for them to hear something totally different. And that's kind of thinking about the pace of how people are going to experience the game. But yeah, I tend to just work off improvisation to begin with, and then just try and hone down what I think is interesting within it. And then, well, then the next process is kind of taking it into logic or something like that, and working with sounds. I mean, to be honest, actually, there's other times when you just start with a rhythm track or something like that, or just some kind of sound. And other times I definitely, well, something I used to do actually was on iTunes, I used to make a bunch of playlists of different moods. So I had something like majestic, something like hopeful, playful, something. I had about like 15 to 20 of those. I would just go through my whole iTunes library of different soundtracks, or even music that wasn't game soundtracks, and just put them into these different categories. And that's something I used to do a lot. And then when I came across some kind of situation in that I'd need to make music for, I'd kind of go back to those as reference points of, oh, what's an interesting way to portray suspense or something.
Wow, that's fascinating. I've never heard of anybody doing that, but it makes total sense, because then it's like you've got this reference library with lots of fresh ideas. That is very cool. You've also got a really interesting way of making sure that the looping doesn't in a cue doesn't get like super, super repetitive. And so explain about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like I had to create some kind of strategy, because I think, and some reviews agree, that my music can be annoying. Or I think it's just, you know, it's just not the kind of thing that you can easily ignore. And for people that don't want to ignore it, that's great. But some people have said it's annoying. But I kind of developed a strategy where, I mean, the main thing is just people sitting in a level, and maybe that they can't complete it, or they're having a difficult time, or just you just spend a long time there, maybe up to half an hour, 2 hours sometimes, you're in the same area which has the same music. I mean, one approach would be we could introduce a different track at a different point, but sometimes you just can't do that. You're just within some kind of area where, you know, there's not a point where you can change the music. So I tend to have these situations a lot, because I've worked, like Lovely Planet, for example, was kind of like a speed running game, but it was effectively something where you would do the levels over and over and over again, trying to get it perfect. So people would spend like a long time with just one track. And same with Snipper Clips. I think it was kind of a puzzle game, and if you get stuck, you're going to be in the level for maybe half an hour. So my strategy was basically the key thing is trying to trick people into forgetting that this loop is only, say, 3 minutes long or something like that, that it's making people forget that this thing is repeating. So, like, the main thing that I do a lot is changing key into the loop point, so that the final part of the track will change key into the beginning part of the track. And, I mean, typically that's just I found a way to change key somewhere within the track. I mean, I probably changed keys tons of times, and then at a certain point, I'm like, oh, this is the end, so I'll need to go back to that key. But I feel when you do that, you don't have this sense of, oh, I recognize this thing, we're back here. When you change key into the loop point, it makes people feel like, oh, this is a progression within the track. Oh, this is the next section or something like that. So that's one thing that I definitely do. And like, usually I'll do something like almost quite cheap. Like, I don't know if you can actually hear this, the piano right now.
Yep.
But
yeah,
I do something quite cheap, like, okay, like I'm here. I'm going to just kind of do these parallel chords going up until I get to my like dominant chord going down to whatever key we started in. But so I'll do that a lot.
That is amazing.
Which sounds a little bit like a Mario Kart beginning or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're going to borrow from somebody, why not Mario Kart?
Yeah, so I mean, to be honest, I don't know if it works because I'm still getting reviews saying the music is annoying. But
it wasn't annoying to me.
Yeah, I don't take it personally. I think that kind of reaction just, it's the other side of the coin of people being able to love it a lot and really enjoy it, I think.
I have a feeling that there are, well, I know that there are a lot of musicians and composers who listen to this podcast who are in the process of kind of getting their careers just off the ground, or maybe they're thinking about it kind of like you were a few years ago. And so I'm wondering if you've got any advice or lessons that you've learned that might be helpful.
My advice is back off. The projects are mine. Just don't bother that they're mine. I'm going to do all the projects from now on. That's my advice. I think just treating every project, no matter how small or how much you think people are going to play it, as the, you know, the most important thing you've ever worked on, and that you want everything you do to be the best thing you've ever made, because maybe not that many people will play it, but within the games community, if someone puts out a small game, their friends are also developers. The person themselves is also a developer who, in a few years' time, is probably going to be making more games. And you just want to give as many people as many opportunities to think, wow, that person did an amazing job. I need to keep them on my radar. I'll want to get in contact with them when I've got this, and this. Yeah, and I tend to like have a rule that if I am not crazy about a track, but I think, oh, maybe it kind of works and the developers like it, I just won't do it. I won't use it. Like, it's so tempting when you're going back and forth with, revisions, and you tried one thing, the developers didn't quite like it. So then you get into a mind frame of, I'm just going to appease them. Like, I'm going to disengage my own taste from this, and whatever, they want to do this, so I'll just make a track like this even though I don't like it. I feel like that's the point at which you start putting out work that isn't going to be very engaging to people, because I think just you are your own best judge of these things, and stuff that isn't compelling to you isn't going to be compelling to other people, is my personal rule. I just don't think you can ever really feel confident if the only thing you're basing your work on is, oh, well, the developers said, yeah, it's fine, they'll use it, even if you don't personally kind of believe in it. Another thing that I'm trying to do more is work on smaller games. What I did at the beginning of my career was, see some big RPG project that like is a one person developer. It's like, okay, cool, I'll make 100 tracks for that. That sounds great. And like, obviously within like a few months, like, oh, they're not emailing me back anymore. Oh, okay, maybe this isn't going to work. So I've wasted my time on a lot of things like that. And even if those things do get finished, it's kind of like, if you spent 2-3 years on it, you hope that it will enough people will see it. So I think it's just having a kind of keeping your wits about you when you're choosing what to work on, because having like, let's see, do some maths, 6 projects in every 2 months is so much better than half a project in a year, I think, particularly when you're starting out. That's like definitely advice I'd give, which I would have liked to have taken more seriously when I began.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. And also, of course, you want to be able to have a portfolio of things that you're really proud of. So it totally makes sense that you'd want to have music that really speaks to you and that you've written that you just have a really strong feeling about, rather than, oh, well, yeah, you're right, they signed off on this, it must be okay. So yeah, so the soundtrack right now for Piku Niku is on Bandcamp, but it sounds like there are plans for a vinyl release too.
There is a vinyl release, yes. We are releasing the vinyl through a label called Ghost Ramp, who have put out a bunch of other game vinyls by Devolver Digital, who are the publisher of Piku Niku. So, I'm excited about that. I've never put out a vinyl before. It's kind of funny to me because my image of vinyl music and listening to stuff, it's like, okay, the band got together in like one room and recorded with these like vintage mics and all of this kind of equipment, and like the fact of the music itself being kind of like very like 90s digital fake trumpets and stuff, it's like the most un-vinyl vinyl ever. But I'm hoping people are going to enjoy it.
I bet.
I think it's a nice package. My friend did the artwork for it, which I really, really love.
Oh, that's so cool. There'll be a link to the vinyl on the webpage for Music Respawn at wshu.org and respawnshow.com. So you can check it out there. And Callum, how can people find you with social media or your website?
Oh, I don't know. There's too many links to say. I don't know. Just okay. Google something. I don't really mind. Yeah, just Callum Bowen. Yeah, I'm around somewhere, YouTube, Twitter.
Well, Callum, it's been so much fun talking with you about this, and good luck with your future projects. I hope we have a chance to talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.